Masechet Moed Katan Daf Tet. We're talking about the halacha that we not only can we not do sad things on Chol HaMoed, but even a happy thing like making a wedding is prohibited. And the reason is De'en me'arvin simcha b'simcha. We can't join together or mix together one joy with another, because if we do that, then we will end up focusing only on the wedding and forget that it's Pesach or Sukkot and forget the essence of the holiday. So now we ask Minelan, what is the source of this law that we can't celebrate two things at once? Dichtiv. Bayash Shlomo ba'aitahi etehag. B'chol Yisrael aimo. Gal gadol melevo hamat ad nacha misraim. Ifne Adonai lohenu shivat yamim. Shivat yamim arba'a asar yom. When King Shlomo completed building the Bet HaMikdash, he made a huge celebration. And at that time, it was Betahi Etechag. Chag means it was Sukkot, so it was during Tishrei. And everybody came, a large crowd, all from all over, and they celebrated, here is the key, 7 days and 7 days, all together, 14 days. Now, it doesn't say precisely which 14 days. The Gemara is going to assume is talking about the 7 days before Sukkot and the 7 days of Sukkot, altogether 14. Why does it have to add it for us? Don't we know 7 and 7 is 14? Okay, we're going to answer that. Now, if you can celebrate two things together at once, then King Shlomo should have made the celebration, the 7 day celebration of the Beit HaMikdash, overlap with the 7 days of Sukkot, and those will be the same celebration for 7 days total. Why did he make 7 days first for the Chanukah of the Beit HaMikdash, and then the 7 days separately for Sukkot? That means that you can't combine two holidays together. All right, it's a pretty good answer. Now, v'dilma mintar lamatrinan v'echad atreme abdinan. So wait a second. Question. Maybe the point is that we shouldn't wait. Remember, we said that if we allow people to make weddings on the holiday, one of the reasons we don't allow is because then everybody will wait till the holiday to get married, and then they'll push off Piru Urvu. And so maybe the idea is that you can't push something off for the holiday and only celebrate on the holiday. But if it happens to be that it's the same time as Sukkot or as Pesach, then you can celebrate both together. And so maybe the only reason that he celebrated 7 days first is because it just so happens that the Beit HaMikdash was completed on the 7th of Tishrei. And so then he celebrated the next 8 days. And then it was Sukkot, because he didn't want to delay the celebration for it to coincide. So maybe that. No, that would not be a sufficient answer. Because he could have left a little bit undone. Nowadays, we always leave a little of our house undone. Zecher le Beit HaMikdash. But he's talking about leaving a little of the Beit HaMikdash undone, right? Leave one area and then finish it off right before Sukkot. And that way you're not delaying the celebration, you're delaying the finishing, and then you can celebrate it together. By the way, this is a good source for what we do sometimes when we finish a Masechet and we want to push off the Siyum for a couple of days, till maybe a Monday or Thursday to skip Tachanun, or when there's going to be a lot of people around, or on Shabbat or something. So we leave off a couple of words at the end, right? And then we push off the celebration. All right, so we have a source for doing that. Okay, so the answer to that is, Shayure binyan Beit HaMikdash lama shayirina. No, it's impossible that we would leave off something Beit HaMikdash. This is not just, finishing myself. This is completing the entire Beit HaMikdash. We're not going to leave something undone. It wouldn't be respectful. And so we say, okay, well, maybe I have a modification. You're right, it's not nice to leave off, some bricks. But how about on top of the hechal, you can see in this picture, there were spikes to keep away the birds and the ravens, because after all, they're slaughtering a lot of animals, and imagine a lot of some birds would want to come, so we don't want them to hang out there. And therefore, we put these spikes on top. Now, this is not such an integral part of the Beit HaMikdash that it would be disrespectful to leave it off. Yet it wouldn't really be finished until then. And so we could leave that off and then push off and then wait till the, and then have the overlapping celebration. And so maybe in fact, halacha is that you can overlap celebrations. And so now we say, no, even that the spikes for taking away the ravens is essential, it's necessary. After all, you don't want to have the birds there if it's also a nice decoration. So you could, you have to have it there and you couldn't delay it. So actually, the reason, the actual proof that we cannot join two things together is from the fact that the pasuk says 14 days. So why, if it says 14 days, why does it tell me 7 and 7? Well, this teaches me that the 14 were not one unit, but rather it's separate units. The 7 days are only for the celebrating the Beit HaMikdash completion, and the next 7 days was only for Sukkot. They are separate, and that's how we know that in general, we do not join together two celebrations. Okay, good. Okay, now that we mentioned this celebration of King Shlomo, here's another really interesting thing. Now do the math. Right? If the second set of 7 days is Sukkot, that means the first 7 days starts on 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, right? So start on the 8th. Now Yom Kippur is on the 10th. That means they're celebrating, eating, drinking, having a party on Yom Kippur. What's going on with that? Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, in fact, that year they canceled Yom Kippur because it was such a special thing to inaugurate the first Beit HaMikdash. So they didn't do Yom Kippur. But then after they did that, they were worried and said, maybe the enemies of Israel are deserving of destruction. By enemies of Israel, I mean Israel, right? Because now we have sins that built up. We didn't get to cleanse. We didn't get to have atonement. Maybe we are guilty now. But heavenly voice came out and said, don't worry about it. Everybody is designated for life in the world to come. And yes, you got the stamp of approval. It was okay that year to override Yom Kippur. Okay, now, I mean, we don't usually listen to bat kol in terms of deciding halacha, but this is guaranteeing that their decision that they did make, however they made it, is okay. Now, my dirush, is there a source for this, that it would be permitted to cancel Yom Kippur that year? And yes, amru kal vachomer, here was their logical, legal derivation. So now they're going to derive it from the celebration of the Mishkan. When it was made, all of the Nesi'im brought presents, right? And they brought presents for many days, 12 days for each of the Nesi'im, and that included Shabbat. On Shabbat also, someone gave a gift of right different animals, as it says there. And so here we have the Mishkan, which is a lower level Kiddusha. The Mishkan is not permanent Kiddusha. When the Mishkan is up, it's Kadosh. When it's gone, it's not Kadosh anymore. And those were individual offerings that those Nesim says, I want to bring this gift. And they brought it even on Shabbat, which is very stringent, because if someone violates Shabbat on purpose with witnesses, the Sikila, so all the more so, Mikdash, the Beit HaMikdash, which is holy forever, even if it's destroyed, that area is holy. The Korban Sibur. And here in that case, celebrating with Korban Sibur that everybody's bringing, not only the individuals. Yom Kippurim Danush Karet. And Yom Kippur is a lower level than Shabbat because someone does it on purpose, is only Karet. So we'll call Shekin. So if we can override Shabbat for the celebration of the Mishkan, all the more so we can override Yom Kippur for the celebration of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, a very interesting proof. Ella, amaha yudogim. If it was such a good proof, then what were they worried about? Hatam, sorech gavoa, hacha, sorech hejot. Over there, regarding the Mishkan, Shabbat was desecrated because they were offering sacrifices to Hashem, and so they're violating Shabbat, but ultimately it's going to Hashem. Here, it's for our own sake. We're eating and drinking, so and that goes. You know, we benefit physically from that eating and drinking and celebrating on Yom Kippur. So maybe they said it's not quite the same. Maybe that Kal Vachomer isn't perfect. And then we answer, oh, this part of the question. And so, they, you know what, they could have done the service, done the Yom Kippur service, and they could have celebrated, but not eat and drink. In other words, have both, you know, do both a celebration, but also don't eat and drink for themselves. In other words, they could have made the korbanot that were necessary for the celebration. So yeah, do that for Gaboha, but they didn't have to celebrate them. They didn't have to eat and drink themselves, and they could observe Yom Kippur at least that much. And the answer is, en simcha belo achila shtiyah. No, there's no rejoicing without eating and drinking. What kind of party would that be if everybody's fasting? And so even though, yes, they're filling their own stomachs, but they're doing it for a good cause in order to celebrate the Beit HaMikdash. And so therefore, the Tava Samir works, and yes, there was permitted for them to do so, even though they were a little worried about it. Okay, Mishkan de Shabbat, Minelan. How do we know that when they dedicated the Mishkan, they did in fact bring those gifts even on Shabbat? It says each day, on the first day, second day, and it says on the seventh day. So seventh day, well, presumably that's Shabbat, right? Maybe not. Maybe it's the seventh Korban offering, but maybe they skip Shabbat. They went from Friday to Sunday. There's an extra word over here regarding the 11th day. It says on the day of the 11th day. It's a doubling of day. So why does it have that extra word there? To teach you, just like a day is a continuous time period, so too all these 11 days up to that point was a continuous time period. Fine. No, maybe a man's means continuous. Continuous meaning days that are fit. Unlike today when you say, you know, it'll be shipped in 3 business days. Oh, say, so that's coming soon. Yeah, but you should order on Thursday and then Friday, you know, then Friday is only one day. And then Monday is President's Day. It doesn't come till next week. Well, we said 3 business days, right? So maybe that's what it means. 3 days that are would be fit to bring a Qurban and excluding Shabbat, but it's still considered continuous. No, Ketiv Kera Aharina B'yom Shenem Asar Yom. On the 12th day, it also says on the day of the 12th day, and has a doubling. Why the extra word? Ma'yom Kulo Rasuf Av Shenem Asar Yom Kulan Resufin. So now this is doubling down, emphasizing. Just like a day is a continuous period of time, these 12 days were all continuous, not even skipping Shabbat, not even skipping a day on which you might think it would be a problem to give a Korban. Okay, and so maybe this here too is referring to days that are fit. Maybe this 12 also means without Shabbat. No, then why would I need 2 of them? So the second one's coming to say, yes, for sure, they did on Shabbat. Okay, now, so now, so far, we have a proof that on Shabbat we can override Shabbat for the Mishkan. What's a proof that Yom Kippur can? We had already had a Kal Kavachomer, but now we're going to have another way of deriving it. Wait, maybe just because it says 14 days that he celebrated for it, and just like a day is continuous, so too they celebrate it continuously. But that would be a good enough proof because it only has one, you know, a day. Maybe it means proper days, fitting days. Oh, Gamar Yom Yom Mehatam. Now we're going to make a Gezer HaShava from the Book of Melachim regarding King Shlomo back to the Torah where it says Yom regarding the Mishkan. Since it's the same word, it has the same meaning, means consecutive days, not a break, not even for Shabbat. Okay, good. Now back to that bat kol. Yasta bat kol v'amra lahem kol lechem mezumanim l'chei olam haba. So don't worry, you're all guaranteed, you made the right decision. And where do we know that God gave them pardon? The very next passage says they celebrated 14 days, and on the 8th day, meaning on the 15th day, the 8th day of Sukkot, King Shlomo sent everybody home and they all blessed the king and they went to their tents, happy, glad of heart for all the good things that Hashem did for David, his servant, and for Yisrael. Okay, tangentially, this is a problematic pasuk because what happened to Shemini Aseret, right? They celebrated 7 days for the Beit HaMikdash, then 7 days of Sukkot, but Sukkot has an added day, Shemini Aseret. So what do you mean he sent them home on the eighth day? Sounds like they didn't celebrate Shemini Aseret. This is particularly ironic because the Haftarah that we read today for Shemini Aseret is this chapter where it says they went home on Shemini Aseret. What, why are they going home? Okay, we're going to address this problem in just a couple of minutes. But anyway, we're going to use this as a proof that their celebration was accepted, even though they skipped Yom Kippur and they were forgiven. How do we see this? Now we're going to atomize each word of this pasuk and learn something from it. They went to their tents. That means they went home. We already saw yesterday that tents means the wives. That means when they went home, their wives were pure. They were not in nida, and therefore that was a happy follow up for the celebration of the Beit HaMikdash and Sukkot. What does it mean that they were happy, that they were able to enjoy the splendor of the divine presence when they participated in the inauguration of the Beit HaMikdash? Not only were they pure, but they all conceived a male child. And all the good, what good? What are the good things that Hashem did? I mean, there's a lot of good things there, but this is adding one more. And Hashem said, you're forgiven. You all are coming to Olam Haba. Great, so that's the main source. But now we're going to do the whole pasuk. David avdo Yisrael amo, vishlam al Yisrael amo, de'achi lehu avon yom ha-kippurim. Ela David avdo mayhi, all the good that Hashem did for Yisrael. What did he do for Yisrael? Well, we just said that he pardoned all their sins on that Yom Kippur, even though they didn't celebrate it. In a way, they commemorated Yom Kippur in the opposite way, through celebration rather than through fasting. Okay, but what's the last thing that all the good that Hashem did for Israel and for David? What does that mean? Now we bring in yet another story, another derasha, that when King Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash, he wanted to bring the Aron in and install it. And the gates shut tight. Shlomo said 23 different songs, prayers, and he was not answered. But then he got to Psalm 24. This means what is number 24? It means the first 23 didn't work until he came to this. And King Shlomo says, gates, right? Lift up your heads, right? Open up. But yet it didn't answer. Velo na'ane right away. Kivan shamar Adonai Elohim al tashep edem shichecha zochra lechaste David abdecha. This time now quoting from Divine Yamim. That is actually talking about bringing in the Aron, right? And say, you know, and please, please answer us in the memory of the good things that David, your servant, did. Miad na'anea. So in other words, King Shlomo, he was not able to open the gates for his own merit, but when he quoted the merit of his father, David, then the gates opened. When they saw that, right, that no one could get the gates open, not even King Shlomo, but for the sake of David, they could open, all the enemies of David, their faces darkened like the bottom of a pot that's all burnt. And then they knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave David for that sin, meaning that when he slept with Bathsheba and killed, had Uriah sent to the front line. And so before that, it was all kinds of politics, and some people were saying, oh, David is not worthy, we don't accept, we don't like you, Shlomo, right? The other brothers, other cousins, everybody. But when they saw that, then it became clear to everyone that David was acceptable, and therefore also Shlomo. Okay, so that's the last thing that explains that. What the good things that Hashem did for David. Rabbi Yonatan ben Asmai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim tanu parashat nedarim ve'er Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Okay, these two sages, Rabbi Yonatan Asmai Asmai and Abiudah, the son of converts, who interestingly is in another famous story together with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and that over there is a negative story that he causes Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to have to go run into the cave. Okay, but that's separate. Now we're talking about this story. These two students came and they studied all the laws of Nedarim, very complex, with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Then at night, they said, okay, goodbye, we're going back home to our home cities. And so they took their leave. It turns out they didn't leave that night. They slept over in the same town. And the next morning, they went back to say goodbye again. Surprised. He says, you already said goodbye last night. Why are you coming back to say goodbye? So you yourself taught us this law that if a student says goodbye to his master and then he sleeps over in the same city, he should come and say goodbye again. It's not respectful to just leave the city, say, oh, you know, I said goodbye already. Go back and say bye again. Right? I mean, this happens a lot, you know, like the double goodbye. Right? It was a Seinfeld like that, right? You said goodbye, but then you hang out more. Does you have to say goodbye again? Yes, it's proper to do that. And here is the proof. The proof is from comparing two pisukim. One from Melachim, where it says, on the eighth day, King Shlomo sent them home. Eighth day, that was our question before. Eighth day sounds like that's where that would be the 22nd of Tishrei, and went home on Shemini Aseret. But here, look, in Divrei Yamim, the parallel to the story, it says that on the 23rd day of Tishrei, that he sent them home. Oh, so what's going on here? I would think what you see is that Divrei Yamim often fixes problems, answers questions that one might have in the Book of Kings. And so here it's clarifying. And it says when he sent them home on the eighth day, doesn't mean the on Shemini Aseret, it means afterwards, after Shemini Aseret was done, and that would be the 23rd. Okay, for our purposes, this is useful because it means that he sent them home on the eighth day, which is the 22nd, but they didn't go home, they didn't travel, right? That was the end of his big celebration. Then they went and observed Shemini Aseret on their own at home, there in Jerusalem. And only on the next day, they came and said goodbye again. So here's where you learn that even if you said goodbye the one day, but you didn't actually leave the city, you slept over, you should come back and say goodbye again. And that's what it means here. It actually reconciles the Lachim and the Viramim and answers all the questions we had before as well. That's we learned this halacha. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, after this happened, after the students came to say goodbye again, he says, "Bene Adam Halalu Anashim Shel Surahem." He said, "My son, look at these two gentlemen. They are men of stature, right? It's worthy to note them and hold them up as a model. Zilga Behon De Li Bar Chucha. Go to them and get a beracha." Azal Ashkachinu De Karamu Kera Ehadade. So when the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's son went there, he saw that they were discussing Torah and they were quoting Pesukim that seemed to contradict each other to try to figure out what it means. Here's an example of what they were doing. Ketiv, you see how sharp these students were, right? Ketiv pales ma'agal raglecha bechol derachecha yukonu. One Pesuk in Mishle chapter 4 says, make level the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. And then according to this, it means you should weigh everything, right? If you have an opportunity to perform this mitzvah and that mitzvah, figure out which one is more important to do, and then do the one that's more important, and that way you'll go have a good path. But the next pasuk in the next chapter says, lest you level out the path of life. And here, meaning, do not weigh a mitzvah. A mitzvah comes to you, even if it's a small thing, just do it, right? Do it right away. And it's not up to you to decide, oh, this is better than that, right? You have, helping someone across the street, you happen to be right there. You don't say, well, if I don't help this person, then I can go over there and I'll do something even greater. right? Just do it as it comes to you and be more tamim. Well, this is a contradiction. Which one should it be? It depends. Can someone else do that mitzvah? The first pasuk is talking about a mitzvah that can be done by others. So both mitzvot will be done either way. So for in that case, you should weigh. Hey, listen, this person needs help crossing the street, but there's someone else right here that can do it. And the other thing that is really important, I have to go, you know, save Israel. So I'll let someone else do that mitzvah. It will get done. And more important for me to go, to do something even more important. So then that's the case. However, if it's something that cannot be done by anybody else, nobody around to help this old lady across the street, even if the next thing that I'm going to is more important, that's not up to you. Just you do the right thing right now, and hopefully you'll get to the next one too. If not, not. Good. Then they started asking the following. Now, regarding Torah, right? How great is Torah? Torah is more precious than rubies and anything that you could want. So that means anything that you could want on earth. But is Torah even greater than valuable things of heaven, like mitzvot? It doesn't say. Maybe that's equal, right? It's just more valuable. Torah is only more valuable than material things. But another pasuk, also in Mishlei, says Torah is unequal to anything that all desired objects. Even heavenly things, even spiritually good things, even misfot are not as good as Torah. Torah is greater than all them. You know, it's a really good question. Is Torah only greater than material things or even greater than other spiritual things? And the answer again is Kan misfa shev shala sota yedei acherim. Kan misfa shev shala sota al yedei acherim. If it's a mitzvah that can be done by others, then you should study Torah. Studying Torah is the greatest. And, you know, what about giving these Pesach packages to the poor? There's already a long line of people doing it. Okay, let them do it, and I'll study Torah. But if no one else can do it, then you got to get up and interrupt your Torah study and go and do it. And that explains those two mitzvot. Amru there. My bayit ha'cha. Okay, they're discussing. Then they finally notice the Bishop of Bar Yochai's son standing there. He says, yes, how can we help you? My father told me to come here and get a beracha. Okay, interesting. He didn't say, can I please have a beracha? He's like, I don't know. My father said to do this. So they give him a very strange beracha. Listen to this. May it be Hashem's will. That you should sow, but not reap. This doesn't sound like curse, right? You plant seeds and you never get the benefit of the harvest. Why would that be good? Ta'il velo tepok. You should go in but never come out. Tepok velo ta'il. You should go out but never go in. Now this is contradictory. Your house should be destroyed and you should live in a temporary dwelling, in a hotel. Your table should be all confused and you should never not see the new year. So he walked out. The kid, he didn't know what to do with this. So he goes to his father. Not enough that they didn't bless me. They even cursed me. They caused me pain. So the Bishop Baruch Hu says, tell me, what did they say? So he quoted the whole thing. He remembered it. Amar le, anach kulehu birchetan inhu, Bishop Baruch Hu said, you understand? These were all actually blessings, doesn't it mean? You should sow and not reap, meaning you should have children and they should not die. That was, you don't get them back, right? They will continue. You should bring in means you should bring in daughters-in-law, and they should not leave. How would they leave? Only if your sons died, then they would go back and marry someone else or go back to their father's house. So they should come in and never leave. Tepuk v'lotel, leave and not come back. Let's talk about your daughters. Your daughters should get married and then they'll leave. The daughters would go to the husband's house, and their husband should live long and not die, And that way they won't be returned to you. This world is like a temporary place. It's like a hotel. The next world is like your permanent house. So it means that your house should be destroyed, meaning your grave, the next world, you should not see it. But rather this world, although it's temporary, should be your dwelling place for a long time. You should have a long life. From Mizmor 49, this is the Mizmor that we say in a mourner's home. It says in their insides, in their thoughts, their inward thought is forever. But in context, actually, this makes a lot of sense that kidbam is a metathesis for kidbam, for kivram, their grave. Their grave is their home forever. Okay, lebalbe. So that's how you know that home, permanent home, is a grave. Lebalbe petorach doesn't mean that your table should be mixed up. But now, but not taking up so many kids, that there is going to be a big commotion on your table. That's a good kind of commotion. That you shouldn't see the new year means that your current wife should not die, that you have to marry another wife. Because you marry another wife, there's the first year of marriage has a special law. You can't go out, you can't go to war, you can't leave. You have to make your wife happy for 1 year. So you should never have to, you did that halakha already once when you got married. You should never have to remarry and then have to count that year again. So in other words, your wife, you should have a long marriage with your current wife. Okay, we mentioned before halachot about leaving your master, and Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafta left his master Rav. His father said, "Go get a blessing from him." So he returned. Amar le yed ava delatibayesh velatitbayesh. So Rav said, "If you have Hashem's will, that you not shame others, and you should not feel ashamed." So it came back to what did he say? He said some words. It didn't seem very significant. Don't be embarrassed. He says, no, this is a very special blessing. This is the very blessing that Hashem told Israel and repeated it. As it says, V'achatem achol v'saboa v'hilatem. Lo yeboshu ami le'olam bidatem ki bekerep Yisrael ani lo yeboshu ami le'olam. So where you should be satisfied and have good, and my people should never be ashamed. You should never be ashamed, and that you don't have what you need, and you'll know that I am Hashem, and so that I am Hashem. Lo yeboshu ami le'olam. So you should lo yeboshu. Lo yeboshu says it twice. Why twice? So you never be ashamed, and you won't shame others. You'll never make a mistake. You'll never be embarrassed. Okay. All right. All the way back to the Mishnah that says, even though on Chol HaMoed you should not do a lot of work, a woman is allowed to get cosmetic treatments, even though sometimes there are a lot of work. Kochelet from the word kachol, blue, meaning that means putting eyeshadow on. And removing hair, and putting red rouge on her face. It says removing hair. Some say it's not talking about facial hair, but rather hair in the below in her privates. Okay, funny story about a woman adorning themselves and putting makeup on and during Chol HaMoed. So Rav Chista's wife would adorn herself in the presence of her daughter-in-law. Maybe she wanted to show her daughter-in-law how to do it, and this is proper. So Yateb Rav Yehuna Barchina Nakamed Rav Chista Yateb Kamar Lo Shenu Ela Yalda Aval Zekena La. And so Rav Huna sat before Rav and said, you know, why is your wife doing this? The halacha is only true for a young woman because she likes to dress up and put on makeup and look good. But for an older woman, it's not as fun for her. It's just a lot of work. And show should not be permitted. And he answered, Amar Elohim, afilu imach, afilu imadi imach. No, any age, even your mother, even your grandmother, no matter how old. Afilu amedet al kibra, even someone who's on her deathbed. She still wants to look good. Tamriin asher bashitin kebashit bekal tabadahata. 60-year-old, that's like really old, right? A 60-year-old is like a 6-year-old when they hear the timbrel. Everybody likes to get up and dance and be excited and look their best. And so it brings joy no matter what age. Okay, I think he understood his wife much better. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo tasud. Okay, person should not put lime on their skin, the kind of a mask that they would leave on for a long time. That would be very gross, unattractive, and not no fun at all. But in the end, after you peel off the mask, then she would be happy that she her skin looks better. Now, so is that this Rabbi Yehuda says not allowed? Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda omed isha lo tasud mipnei shenivudu las. Not she's not making all this stuff look nice, right? She's going to go all those days and look disheveled. But Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if she can take off that lime mask on the holiday, see if it's one that lasts many days, all holiday she's going to look disheveled, there's no point. You can't do that because now you're not benefiting. But if you can take it off on the holiday, right, just overnight or a day, then even though right now she is distressed, but when she takes it off, she'll be really happy. So it's okay that delayed gratification is called gratification is sufficient. And now, hold on, does Rabbi Yehuda really agree with this logic that delayed gratification is considered significant? We have a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah that says 3 days before a holiday of idolaters, you're not allowed to do business with them. Because when you do business, they can say, oh, look, I made this business deal. I'm so happy. And then that happiness is going to join in about mixing one celebration with another. It's going to help them to celebrate on their idolaters. They're going to go and thank their idols for this good thing. And we don't want to give them any excuse, any reason to thank their idols, because then we're participating in the idolatry. So therefore, you can't do business with them. And that includes lending them money or even collecting a debt from them. Okay, that's what says before. May says you can collect the debt because person is always upset. I have to pay money, right? You ever see someone? You owe money to? They try to avoid you. No, nobody wants to pay money back. So you can collect the debt because then he'll be so sad that I have to pay this guy. I have to pay him back $1,000. Now I'm out. That's good. Other sages said even though he's not happy right now when he's paying it, after he's done paying, then he's happy. Oh, I had this debt on my head, this bill, I wasn't allowed to pay. I paid it. Now I'm so happy that it's done. And that's why the rabbis say, so the majority says delayed gratification is significant, but Rabbi Yehuda here says delayed gratification is not significant. So we have a contradiction. Which one is it? Rav Nachman, by so we're going to have two answers. The celebration of the holiday is a separate thing because all celebration of the holiday is like this, that you have to do work now and you get gratification later. After all, cooking, baking, all that, ask anybody before Pesach how much work it is. A lot of work, but then the holiday comes and we're happy, right? All that work paid off. Even on Chol HaMoed, you have to cook and work, but it's okay. Delayed gratification. And so too, putting a face mask on, even though it's distressing, she'll be happy after. So all that is good. And therefore, that's a halakha that is unique and works regarding the holidays. And so that's what it'd be that would apply it there, but not necessarily everywhere else, not necessarily for the laws of Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Na'amad, another answer is they're arguing on psychology. Yehuda thinks that non-Jews, they have to pay something back. They're upset no matter what. And they don't see the bright side that they are done with it. Whereas Chachamim think that they do see the bright side and they will be happy. And that's the machlok. Namad of Yehuda. Sometimes you have a young woman who reached physical maturity. In other words, she already starts developing physically, but she didn't reach the age of 12 yet. So they, because of that, they're going to be embarrassed by the way they look in front of their friends because they're more advanced. And so they want to remove their hair so that they will not be embarrassed. How do they do it? On the yotoflototan besid. If they're very poor, so then they use lime because it's very cheap. And even though it's painful and distressing and all that, well, that's the only one thing that they can afford. Ashirotoflototan besolid. If they're more wealthy, then they use fine flour and get some kind of dough and they wait till it hardens and then they could use that to like a wax. If they are princesses, then they can use this special oil from myrrh. And we learned that from Megillat Esther, where the woman that were brought to Ahasuerus had to sit for 6 months. I think it's exaggerating there a lot. I don't know what would happen to someone if they sat for 6 months and any kind of oil. Okay, my shemen hamor, what actually is this? It's this perfume called setach. It's referring to an oil that comes from the resin of myrrh tree. And here you see a picture here of that resin that they would use. But that's one opinion. Others say it's olive oil from olives that have not yet reached a third of their growth. These are very acidic, and you put them on your skin, and it's depilatory for the hair. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, an pikinon, shemen zayit shelo bishilish. Right, another word for this is the an pikinon. That's referring to that one third ripe oil. Why do people like to put on their body? Because it removes hair and it also makes the skin nice and soft. We end the daf with a story. Rabbevai, who had a daughter, and he put lime on her limb by limb to remove the hair. I don't know if he did it himself or maybe he had a cosmetician do it. He paid for it. And even though this was a process to have to remove all her hair, but when she did that, she looked really, really beautiful, and he was able to get 400 dinar for marrying her off. That was for the bride price. And so it was a good investment. And now there was a non-Jew that lived in his neighborhood. He also had a daughter. He saw the rabbi do this. He says, oh, good idea. I'm going to make some money off my daughter. He put lime all over her body at one shot. Right? This is a drastic measure. You have to do it little by little. It's very strong stuff. He blamed the rabbi. He says, see, I copied him, and now my daughter died. So the rabbi killed my daughter. Okay. Okay, separately, another criticism of this Rabbevai says they drink a lot of beer, and that's why his daughter needs to use the lime to take it off, because drinking beer causes, apparently, people to be very hairy. And then, we don't drink also beer, therefore our daughters, they look beautiful naturally, and they don't have to do this special lime treatment. All right, so a lot of good advice here, but especially good advice on how to maximize our celebration of the holiday.